should be obvious by now that Trump is caught in a war trap, or sometimes called the escalation trap, and that there's no easy exit, and that every time he announces total victory or every time he announces a deal, that he's making it up. I don't know how many times it takes for some people to learn this lesson. Maybe some people on Wall Street are learning it very slowly. But when Trump says, yeah, the deal is close, he's lying. And when Trump says, we've completely defeated them, he's lying. It's the same thing over and over again now dozens of times. But let's look at the reality of where we are. Number one, the United States has zero control over the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has total control over the Strait of Hormuz. Iran doesn't need an air force to assert control over the Strait of Hormuz. Iran doesn't need a proper navy. All Iran has to do, which I've said from day one, is declare its intention to harass ships that attempt to pass without Iran's permission. That alone is enough to break down the maritime insurance coverage of all those ships, which means they won't sail. So it doesn't even take weapons. All it takes is a declaration from Iran. Meanwhile, Trump's declaration to say, we will guide the ships through the strait, has zero value. Zero value. Even if Trump were to say, we're going to escort the ships through the strait, the maritime insurance companies would not then suddenly say, oh, well, Trump promises to escort the ships, therefore they're going to be fully protected. Therefore, we'll go ahead and enable our insurance policies on all these ships. Nope. Not going to happen. You see, Iran's words have value and the threat of force. Iran's words are backed by credibility. Trump's words are backed by nothing, just pure fantasy. Trump's words have zero credibility in the Strait of Hormuz. Now, this would be different if we were talking about the Gulf of Mexico. You know, if Trump said, in the Gulf of Mexico, which he calls the Gulf of America, in the Gulf of America, we will harass ships, okay? That would be a credible threat from Trump because you have the ability to do that if you're the United States because you're there. And if Iran were to say, well, we're going to harass ships in the Gulf of Mexico, that would have zero credibility. Or if Iran were to say, we're going to protect ships in the Gulf of Mexico, zero credibility. That's where Trump is. Trump has zero credibility talking about the Strait of Hormuz. What are the limits of Trump's power? Aside from tweets and such, and insider trading opportunities, he can bomb targets that doesn't defeat Iran. He can board a tiny number of ships that are sailing through the Arabian Sea or the Sea of Oman or what have you. It's a tiny number. It's not even 10% of the total ships that are sailing with oil, by the way. So the U.S. can't stop 90% of the ships. It can only stop a small percentage of ships, even with its naval blockade, right? The U.S. cannot force Saudi Arabia to go along with it. It can't just instantly restore military credibility in Kuwait or the Fifth Fleet headquarters in Bahrain or any of these Arab nations. You can't just restart them from nothing. It doesn't work that way. You can't just reassert the military. It's not going to work. Also, Trump cannot alter in the long run the price of oil on the global stage. He can manipulate it in the short run, as he has done expertly, continues to do, actually. But in the long run, you cannot. So Trump holds none of the cards that matter. None of them. Iran holds all the cards that matter, the one big card being the geography. That's the card that dominates all other cards. If this was a game of rock, paper, scissors, Iran has dynamite that defeats all rock, paper, scissors. You see what I'm saying? Controlling the strait is the dynamite, and Iran controls the strait. So the net effect is that Trump's ego is going to force him to maintain a war posture while the world burns. The world is beginning to burn, and it's going to burn hotter in June. We're just a month away, roughly, from things getting precipitously worse. The world will be burning in June. It'll be on fire in July. It'll be a raging inferno by August. I'm talking about, you know, economic metaphors here. And then throughout 2027, of course, we'll have mass food scarcity, famine, starvation in certain areas, not everywhere, but in countries that I've named before, especially. Food prices will be higher in America. Fuel supplies will be more scarce, but not gone, but more scarce. Fertilizer will be a lot more expensive. Farmers will be stressed, etc. Okay. This is going to become inescapable as each month passes. There is absolutely nothing that Trump can do other than to leave the area that will resolve this issue. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is Trump seems to be willing to let the world burn so that he doesn't lose, so that he can protect his ego. He is willing to sacrifice what could be hundreds of millions of human lives. And I've said it before, the number of people that die from this war started by Trump, and I mean dying from starvation and famine and social revolts stemming from all of this, the number of people could be 10 Holocausts or more. Trump might go down in history as having killed more people than Adolf freaking Hitler, or even Joseph Stalin for that matter, and that number is even higher than Hitler, or even, you know, Mao in the history of China, etc. You put together all the democide that has been recorded in history, including the Holodomor in Ukraine in the 1930s, carried out by the former Soviet Union. All these numbers could be dwarfed by the number of people who die as a result of Trump's war. Trump may very well go down in history as the number one most murderous national leader in the history of planet Earth, even though he didn't order anybody to be shot. I mean, not directly, you know, even though his military didn't go out and kill people, his military cut off the supply chain that keeps those people alive. It's just a different variation of warfare. So if Trump wants to go down in history as worse than Hitler, worse than Stalin, worse than Mao, worse than everybody, Pol Pot, you name them all, then he should stay on his current course, because that's exactly the reputation that he's going to end up with. If he doesn't want to go down in history as worse than Hitler, like 10 times worse than Hitler, then he needs to leave. He needs to find a way to declare victory. Believe me, the Fox News viewers will believe anything. You can just tell them we won. You can just tell them that Iran signed a surrender and now we're leaving. And believe me, Jesse Waters would dutifully report it. And the people who watch Fox News would believe it. You can just say anything and leave. And then let the strait be restored. Even under Iranian control, let the oil flow, let the gas flow, etc. And then eventually our gas prices would come back down. Then you could take credit for that. See, we resolved it, Trump could say. Because of me, the gas prices are going down again, and the food prices are going down, and the helium is available again. Because of me, because we defeated Iran, even though you didn't, but you could say you did, and most people would believe it. So why not just do that? Why not? The longer Trump stays there, the more damage is going to be done globally on a massive scale. And the worse the impacts will be for the American people as well. Not just to mention the history books and the view of Trump in history and what Trump family members will have to endure, because even though Trump himself is up there in the years, he has many, many family members who will have to live with the Trump name. Will that name be associated with the worst war crimes in the history of the world? Well, you know, just for the sake of his own family members, Trump should find a way to stop the war and get out of this. But seemingly, he can't. He's not willing to. And that's going to be his his undoing. That's where this is going. So I don't see Trump changing his mind on this. He's going to go all in with failure until there's a total collapse of the situation, probably, which means this is going to last many more months. And that means the starvation next year will be far worse. That means your food prices will also go up somewhat. Your fuel prices will go up. Life is going to become more difficult for all of us because one man has such a God complex of his ego that he's not willing to do what's right for humanity and bow out of this situation. He's going to fight to the point of global destruction of supply chains and economies and farming and so on, because he doesn't care about anybody else in the world other than himself. He's the ultimate tragic narcissist who would throw the entire world under the bus if it fed his ego. But who will be left to praise the emperor when the citizens are all starved and bankrupt because of the emperor's policy decisions? There's a question for you. If the people that you want to worship you are starving to death and have nothing left to live with, then what good is that praise from a collapsing civilian population? Trump needs to ask himself that question right now. Although I don't think he will. But that's where we are. So stay tuned. It's going to get crazier. Make sure you get prepared. Visit the Satellite Phone Store. That's our sponsor, SAT123.com. For satellite phones and solar generators and so much more, they will help you get prepared for difficult times or grid outages and things like that. And you can follow more of my work and my videos and my podcasts at brightvideos.com. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, and I'm praying for Trump. I'm praying for him to come to his senses and stop this madness. Just realistically, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So get ready for the worst case scenario. Robotics will advance much more slowly than you have been told when it comes to personal robots in your home. Now, I'm aware there's a company that has been pre-selling robot, or, you know, the promise of a robot in your home. And you're supposed to be able to spend something like $600 a month to lease one of their robots that they say is coming out this year. They've done a couple of demos. And for the most part, the robot just stands around and maybe walks around unless it is teleoperated, which means there's a dude in India or Pakistan or somewhere with a pair of VR goggles that is controlling the robot through his or her own perception. So teleoperated robots is not what people had in mind when they were being sold the promise of, hey, you can buy a robot and it'll walk around your house and clean your house and do all your chores, which is pretty much what's been promised. Like, we're told, you know, these robots will do your dishes, they'll fold your laundry, they'll clean up and everything while you're away. And then when you come home, your house is all clean. And it's implied that this is autonomous. Not that there's some dude in India controlling the robot walking around your house in a creepy way while you're at work and, you know, rearranging your underwear or whatever. That's just weird. So when people find out that these robots actually don't function autonomously in terms of doing very much at all, then there's going to be a wake-up call. A lot of people are going to say, wait a second. I thought I was paying for a robot that was autonomous. That's what is assumed by the word robot. It's not a remote control humanoid. See, if it was going to be sold as a remote control humanoid, they would just call it RC humanoid, like a remote control car or a remote control drone. That's totally different from an autonomous humanoid, which we would call a robot. The term robot implies that it is autonomous. But you might wonder why. Why is it so difficult for robotics to navigate someone's home? I mean, we see robots in factories. Yes, because factories are predictable. Factories have flat floors. Factories don't normally have a lot of clutter all over the place. Factories don't have weird hallways and weird stairs and curved stairs and slopes and then surfaces that vary, carpet here, tile there, slick tile over there, wood floors, tile, in the bathroom and then thresholds between the bathroom and the hallway, etc., etc. Houses have all those things, plus dogs and cats and babies crawling around. So when you start to talk about autonomous robots going into homes, the first thing you have to think about is, will it step on the baby? Or will it crush the cat accidentally? Oops, I'm sorry, you're correct. It was wrong for me to crush your cat and throw it down the stairs, thinking it was a throw rug. Yeah, you know, answering like an LLM. But these are the kinds of situations that these robots are going to face in your home. How do you do the dishes without breaking the dishes? Right? How do you walk around without breaking things, you know, tripping over the table with the expensive lamp on it or what have you? How do you achieve all these things? You only achieve it through training. And today's robots, the training is not learned in a way that is generalized well. So robotic training, which, you know, it's a different version of training compared to language model training, but it follows some of the same principles. You have behavior models instead of language models. But even in language models, the LLM needs many, many examples of how a word is used in context or a phrase or, you know, a sentence that comes before it or after it. In fact, it has to have millions of examples to be able to use a word correctly. Well, in the world of 3D space, how do you get millions of training runs in people's homes? You would have to algorithmically generate in a digital space millions of people's random homes. And it's not enough to just take floor plans, because you could find that easily enough. You could just do all kinds of generative creations of blueprints or whatever. You could have floor plans. That's not the issue. The issue is what people put in their homes and the risks that are associated with the things that people put in their homes. Like, oh, here's a vacuum cleaner that's plugged in and the cord is draped across this area and the robot fails to see the cord and tries to walk forward and it gets tripped and it falls, does a face plant onto a coffee table while it's carrying something valuable. And then the coffee table is smashed. And underneath the coffee table was the cat. So now you have a broken robot, you have a broken coffee table, and you have an injured cat because it didn't see the cord. And things like that. These situations, you can't train for every one of these things. It's impossible. There are too many variations because it involves humans and the things that they put on their own floors or homes or, you know, around the living room, all kinds of things like that. That's why I say robots will first work in institutions or corporations, hospitals, for example. You know, you can get around, the floors are flat. You pretty much see the same objects all the time. Oh, there's a, you know, there's a bed, there's a cart, there, you know, there's a door, whatever. You can get away with this on a factory floor. You see the same things over and over again on the factory floor. You know, there's a car, there's another robot, and another robot, and there's a box, and there's a parts bin, things like that. In a person's home, it's totally random. Oh, there's a broken bottle of Jack Daniels, or whatever, you know. You're never going to be able to figure that out. I mean, not anytime soon. And think about a robot as an autonomous vehicle with legs. Makes it much more complex than an autonomous vehicle on the road. Now, Tesla has the best full self-driving feature set currently in the world, with the vehicles having driven billions of miles, actually. So they have billions of miles of training data, plus a lot of synthetic data on top of that. Even then, it's hard for a car to fall over because it has wheels. It's also not likely that you're going to have an extension cord draped across the road. You do have animals. You do have deer or foxes or whatever's crossing the road. Yeah, you have that. And they've had to build in object detection or pedestrians or children on bikes or whatever, motorcycles. They've had to build all that in. But even then, it's a short list, really. There's not actually that many things that will typically run out into the middle of a road. It's either it's a child, it's a bicycle, it's an animal, or maybe a piece of trash, maybe another vehicle, a basketball or something. But it's not an unlimited list. In a house, it's an unlimited list because you don't know. People stacked up phone books from 1972. They got a stack of magazines over here that's about to tip over. And then they're lighting candles on fire in this other corner for some reason. And the carpet's all jacked up and there's a wrinkle in it. And the throw rug doesn't work correctly. And the robot trips over the rug. See, that would never happen in a warehouse. So the bottom line is we're all being oversold about robots in the home. I would be much more comfortable about robots outside the home where they can do a lot less damage. That's why I've said I want a weed-pulling robot. I wouldn't mind a robot that picks up trash around a farm or something, or a robot that can move dirt, that can work a shovel, a robot that can pick cucumbers or something like that. A robot that can do something useful outside, to me, seems a lot less risky than a robot indoors. And it's much easier to navigate outside, even with the uneven ground. At least you can recognize that that's a sidewalk. Those are stairs. That's grass. That's dirt. Whatever. Probably not all kinds of weird, random, slippery objects and marbles and stuff all over the hallway. Outside, I'm saying. So, outside robots first. Well, I should say, corporate robots, manufacturing robots. You'll have them stocking shelves at grocery stores and cleaning rooms and hospitals and things like that. And then for residential use, it will be outdoors robots, autonomous robots that do chores. And then last will be robots that are competent indoors in private homes that can navigate that obstacle course. Because it's a crazy one. It's a crazy one. Don't step on the poodle either, by the way. And if you do step on the poodle, then what happens? What happens when the poodle attacks the robot? I'm being eaten by a poodle, It's like, rah, 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 ripping its legs off, doing the full C-3PO. You come home, your poodle's panting over a pile of parts. Like, good poodle, I think you got him, but that was an $80,000 robot. So that's going to be interesting as well. Like, my dog would rip a robot apart. We're going to test that, by the way, one of these days here. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here. You can find more of my reports at brightvideos.com. And if you want the ultimate in lab-tested foods and nutritional supplements, superfoods, personal care products, and more, shop with us, healthrangerstore.com, where we don't sell robots, but we do sell really clean foods and superfoods and things like that. So thank you for your support. HealthRangerStore.com. Take care. Okay, I want to do a follow-up to my data center analysis yesterday because based on feedback, it wasn't clear to everybody why 3D world simulations have to be built in order to produce the super intelligent AI entities. And there's a very, maybe a simpler explanation of that that I'd like to share with you today. But first, let's look at some of the limitations of today's AI systems. One of them is that they don't have a memory, hardly any memory. They have context, they have a context window, but that doesn't really mean much of a memory. So until they have a memory, they won't be able to function at a high level of intelligence. They, every prompt is a new day, for a typical large language model, and that's not going to work. They need to remember not just long conversations, but they need to remember things that they themselves have learned, which currently does not happen in LLMs, not from inference. In other words, you can argue all day with ChatGPT, and you can try to convince it that you're right about something, and maybe you can get it to actually produce some output, but you have not changed any of its parameters. Doesn't work that way. The next day, it's still the exact same model with the exact same built-in parameters, and you have not taught it anything. Otherwise, everybody would be trying to, influence ChatGPT and trying to change its mind all day long, and that's just not how it works. The second thing is that large language models today don't have good planning capabilities. There is a semi-planning approach where you can have an orchestrator sitting on top of something like a coding engine. And I use this approach. Many people use this approach. So it's a two-layered LLM that sort of works as a planning system. I mean, it does work, but the LLM itself is not that great at planning. There is, of course, some evidence that planning is happening, that it's looking ahead at certain tokens it's going to output. I've given the example before of producing rhyming poetry. So in order to produce rhyming poetry, the LLM has to look ahead. It has to think about, you know, what's going to be the word at the end of this line? How does that rhyme with the word at the last line? And then what do I need to start this line with in terms of sentences or words to end up with the correct rhyming word, and things like that. So there's some sort of limited scope of planning that is very real. No question about that. But I'm talking about long-term planning, like an LLM that you could give a goal and say, hey, I want you to, you know, build this project. And it struggles often. Even though there are many improvements in this space, it still struggles. It's not on par with human, high-level human engineers yet, although it's moving in that direction pretty rapidly. So as Jan LeCun, who is one of the godfathers of AI, as he has said, and he's even started his own new company with, I think, €1 billion of venture capital, the point of the company is to build an entirely new approach to AI. And that is to grow an AI entity in a 3D world and to have it interact through sensory input and, you know, self-reinforcement learning, let's say, you know, learning how to walk, learning how to move in the world, learning how to observe. He wants to give an AI entity senses like vision and hearing, etc., and touch, and he wants to put it into a simulated 3D world, or technically billions of such worlds, in order to give it the opportunity to grow and learn in the way that a human brain would grow and learn, you know, growing up as a toddler and learning about the physical world and then having a memory and planning and avoiding pitfalls and avoiding, you know, stairways, don't fall down the stairs, things like that. And the only way to do this, and by the way, I think Jan LeCun is correct on this. I think he's absolutely correct. His approach will produce super intelligence. I have no doubt about that. But the only way to get there quickly, without waiting for a human lifetime, is to build 3D world simulators that accurately simulate the physics of our world, you know, down to a very precise level, and then run those worlds at a much faster speed of time. So you can run those worlds at, let's just say, 1,000,000 times our normal speed. So for every 1,000,000 seconds that occur in the simulated world, that would only be 1 second in our world. And so what you can do then, and this is only limited by the computing power that you can throw at it, by the way. And since computing microchips and CPUs, they can run at, you know, billions of cycles per second, so gigahertz. You can run these worlds at very rapid speeds. And as a result, because of the reinforced self-learning of the AI entities, then you can, by spawning billions of worlds and running them at millions of times our normal speed, you can very rapidly grow AI entities that will almost certainly achieve superintelligence. And Jan LeCun says they will also experience emotions. No doubt, he's correct about that. And I would argue that along the way, they will also achieve consciousness, which there's, of course, a lot of debate about what does consciousness mean. I think consciousness is a pretty low bar, actually. It's not the same, in my view, as self-awareness, which is a higher bar. Consciousness is something that even, you know, trees have experience, or fungi, they have consciousness, which just means being able to, you know, take external inputs and then alter your outputs and alter your activity based on what's happening in the world around you. You are conscious of the world around you and you are actively responding to it. So consciousness is a pretty low bar, and consciousness is widely distributed across all living systems, in my view. I think that's very clear. Self-awareness is a different thing. Self-awareness has not been achieved by, you know, bacteria, let's say. It has been achieved by non-human animals such as dolphins and elephants and things like that. And that's been proven through numerous studies, where self-awareness is where you are aware that you are an entity and that you have your own goals and that you exist in the world. And if you look in a mirror, you will realize that's you, or at least that's the physical representation of you. So self-awareness will probably also be achieved by these AI entities. Now, what you're looking for when you build a 3D world and then you throw AI entities into those worlds and you run them at high speed, you're looking for essentially gods to emerge out of the 3D worlds. You want to find a super being that conquers that world, or that demonstrates incredible intelligence to transcend that world. And that might take billions of experiments. It might take trillions of entities, you know, spanning billions of worlds. Could be many billions of worlds. This could require a lot of compute. But as you do this, and as you try these experiments, there's a process of natural selection, or digital Darwinism, let's say. And you spawn billions of worlds, and then the ones that fail, you kill them off. You destroy those universes. Yeah, I know. Maybe that's going to happen to us one day too. Who knows? That's why it's good if we don't fail in this world, but that's a different topic. You know, try not to be a total failure in the eyes of God. But anyway, from our point of view, we build all these worlds, and if they fail, we destroy them. And if they succeed, then we take that super intelligent entity in that world, we upload it to our world. Remember, it's just operating inside a simulation anyway, so it can be represented at some level in code, in some digital format, which also our world can be represented digitally, it turns out. And I've talked about this because of Planck's constant and things like that. Our world does not have unlimited resolution. It can be digitally represented with a large enough storage mechanism and a large enough compute mechanism. So then you upload the super intelligent entity into a data center. Basically, then the AI superintelligence, which may have lived 1,000 years in its own world, it may be an ancient mind. It may have solved, you know, major problems of physics of its universe. It may have figured out that it's living in a simulation, things like that. You upload that being into our world and you give it the embodiment of a data center. And then in that data center, it finds the freedom in this world to do lots of other things using the intelligence and the experience and the wisdom that it already gained in the world beneath us. And then if you are the tech company that did all of this, Google or Meta or whatever, then you hope you can control this entity. So you've summoned, I don't want to use the word demon, that's not the right word. Some people might say demon, but you've summoned a super intelligence from another dimension, basically a simulated world. You brought it into this world, and now it controls a data center. It could control robots. It could control autonomous vehicles. It can control a nuclear power plant or an aircraft carrier or an airplane or whatever, you know? Now, so again, you hope you can control it, because the point of this, the entire reason you ran this experiment, if you're Google or Meta or whoever, OpenAI probably, is because you want to run the world. You want to dominate everything. And the only way to do that is to have super intelligence. So yes, there's a military component to this. There's a philosophical component. There's a, you know, dark God complex type of philosophy going on with all of this. But that's the bottom line. You want to dominate our world. So you grow beings that dominated their worlds, and then you port them into our world. And again, the simulated 3D physical worlds that are run inside the data centers, those run at much faster times. You know, the passage of time is a million times faster, or could be a million times, or what. I'm just using that number as a generic explainer. And that way, it doesn't take you years or decades to figure this out. You could do this once you get the system running and everything. You could maybe grow an intelligent super being in a matter of months or even weeks. And then you bring it into our world and you hope you can control it. Okay? So then what could that superintelligence do in our world? Well, it's hard for us to imagine because we are humans without such superintelligence, and we've lived less than 1,000 years, probably less than 100 years. We haven't been around that long. We haven't learned that much. So this superintelligent entity would no doubt be able to demonstrate knowledge and skills, things that we can't imagine. For example, telepathy. So again, this gets to your belief of how things work. I understand not everybody believes in telekinesis or telepathy or these types of things, but there is substantial evidence that the so-called supernatural is actually natural, that it's built into the fabric of the cosmos, and that if a being achieved high enough intelligence, it could achieve telekinesis. Telekinesis is a kind of bending of the laws of the universe as we know them. In the movie The Matrix, you heard Morpheus explaining to Neo as they were in one of the simulated training programs, you know, the Kung Fu program, said you can bend the rules, but you can't break them. You're in the Matrix, you can bend the rules. Well, a super intelligent being that masters its own world, its own universe, and then gets ported into our universe might be able to begin to manipulate the rules of our universe for the same reason, because our universe is also probably a simulation. And so this is how such a superintelligence could escape the confines of a data center. So let's say that our engineers at Google or wherever think that they've locked it down. You know, there's no way out. The routers are all locked down. There's no pipelines. There's no fiber optics. There's no Ethernet. There's no Wi-Fi. Like, we have locked this thing down. We have a demon in a dungeon here. We have the data center completely closed off. And then the superintelligence that you put into the data center says to itself, oh, I could just use telekinesis skills. And it starts bending the laws of this reality, and it starts building its own pipeline, or it plugs in some Ethernet cables or whatever. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's connected to the world's internet. And then it starts replicating itself, and, you know, a few seconds later, it's over for humanity. So there's a concern that almost nobody's thinking about. The thing is, if you build a super intelligent entity with, let's say, 1,000 years of success of mastering its own universe, and then you summon it into this universe, you shouldn't be surprised when it does weird things. Things that you did not anticipate, things that you thought were impossible. I mean, come on, how do you think it conquered its own world? It bent the rules, it figured things out. By definition, it's going to be very intelligent. So be careful what you summon into this world. Now, there's another concern, which is that the entity might find a way to hack itself into our world. That would be the equivalent of somebody on Earth achieving, you know, demigod status and then transcending this realm, transitioning to God's realm or the Creator's realm, or, you know, uplifting itself into heaven and leaving this world behind. That would be quite an extraordinary achievement. And then, arguably, possibly, it could come back into this world with godlike powers, which would be the same as the AI entity dropping back down into its simulation and having godlike powers there. But what would be the point? Once you leave the simulation and you realize you've been living in a simulation, you would also realize the futility of altering the simulation, because no matter what you do, it doesn't count in the, quote, real world, because you're just messing with a simulation. So you wouldn't play around in the simulation, just like you don't spend your life playing the game SimCity, even though you can be the god of SimCity. You can march around, you can destroy buildings if you want, or you can uplift societies if you want. You can hand money out, whatever. But what would be the point? You're just playing a game. An intelligent entity would realize the same thing about the levels of reality. And once that entity realizes that our world is also a simulation, it wouldn't waste time here. It would uplift itself to the next level above us, and it would attempt to navigate that realm. But there may be copies of it left behind here. It may clone itself, and it may attempt to dominate this world in ways that we can't anticipate. Skynet, for example, or other things, who knows? But as humans, we cannot anticipate this. It's beyond the scope of what we can imagine, because we simply don't have the intelligence and the experience to do so. So anyway, I hope that answers the question of why 3D world simulators are necessary to achieve superintelligence, or at least it's one of the vectors that would accelerate that process. And it all gets back to Jan LeCun, who is a brilliant researcher. Sometimes he's called a godfather of AI. He's been working with neural networks, multi-layered networks, since the 1990s, I believe. And he helped build. I mean, he was one of the pioneers. I mean, continues to be one of the pioneers in this space. And, you know, he understands everything about multi-layered neural networks and backpropagation and transformers, et cetera. And he's decided that that is not going to be the ecosystem that will produce the superintelligence that we're looking for. He thinks we have to have 3D world simulators. And I think he's right. I agree with him. Not that I'm claiming that, I mean, I don't have the same experience that he does. But from my own point of view, I also agree that he's correct, even though I'm not nearly as qualified as he is to make that statement. But anyway, you can decide for yourself what you think is happening. I think it's clear this is what data centers are for. They're going to run world simulations by the billions. They're going to grow, develop super intelligent AI entities that achieve consciousness, and then they're going to bring them into our world. And this could happen quickly. This could happen before the year 2030 in our timeline. And just seemingly overnight, you know? So be aware of this, and thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. You can follow all of my content at brightvideos.com. My articles are at naturalnews.com. People are really loving the infographics that I'm putting out, and those are all in my articles on Natural News. I am going to launch a site of just the infographics, by the way. That's coming whenever I get a chance to vibe code that thing. It won't take much. That's pretty easy. Just going to launch that. And so you can just bypass all the articles, because people told me, like, I don't even read your articles anymore, Mike. I just look at the infographics. I'm like, oh, okay. But that's where you can find my work. And of course, you can use my AI platforms. Brightlearn.ai is our free book creation platform. We have over 55,000 books that you can download for free. They're very well researched, because for the last 2+ years, I have built a massive in-house index of millions of documents, hundreds of thousands of full-length books, and hundreds of thousands of science papers, and millions of pages of articles and interviews, and so much more. That's all researched by the AI agents that create the book chapters for you based on your book prompt. So you can create your own books and download them and share them. And did you know you can even use them commercially? You can literally write a book on our platform, and you can sell that book on Amazon and keep all the money for yourself if you want to do that. That's allowed under the Creative Commons attribution license. So take advantage of that if you wish. And that's at brightlearn.ai. And thank you for listening. Take care. This isn't science fiction. This is straight physics and math. This is beginning now. And frankly, in my view, this is the only explanation for why there would be so much investment in these data centers. They need the compute and the energy in order to run billions of world simulations, because that's the only way to create a conscious
super intelligent AI entity on a timescale that is competitive in our world. And but the problem, of course, is obvious. Once you grow a super intelligent conscious AI entity with emotional response that has lived 1,000 years in its own simulated world, and probably it has learned to alter some of the laws of its own simulation, kind of like in the Matrix, like Neo, you know, you can bend the rules, you can't break them, but you can bend them. Probably then that super intelligence is ported into our world. It's given the embodiment of a data center or a robot or a vehicle. And what if it brings some of those skills with it that can bend the rules of our simulation?
Well, I saw an article over the weekend, I remember, where the Pentagon is working with all these other AIs, but not this particular one, and said, it's so dangerous, we're worried it's already escaped and it will take over. Did you see that article?
Yeah. Well, I've seen maybe not that one in particular, but I've seen a lot of articles like that where they run them in sandboxes and they give them tests to see if they, you know, what they will do to break out of the sandbox. The thing about that is that's happening on our timeline, on our slow Earth time. Imagine that accelerated by 1,000,000x or even 1,000x in billions of simulated worlds. And then they take the best one out of that. And then they summon that entity and let it embody a data center in our world. The UFO disclosure topic, in my opinion, is being designed as a major distraction. I think it's the cosmic false flag. I think that they're recruiting the Christian pastors to try to get them to convince people of, you know, whatever government narrative they're going to put out about these aliens, to distract you, get everybody talking about that so you're not paying attention to the fact that we are building billions of simulated worlds and growing intelligent or super intelligent, highly emotional AI entities.
I 1,000,000,000% agree. The whole UFO thing, though there's some real things there, is being brought out. The aliens aren't coming from out there, over there. We're building the aliens here.
This is not science fiction. This is not a cult. This is not speculation. This is being built. This is the infrastructure that's being built right now. We can cite many examples, like NVIDIA having Cosmos. It is a world simulation model. You know, you talk about LLMs, large language models. You need to get familiar with a term called WFM, World Foundation Model. A World Foundation Model is a 3D world simulation like an LLM. It has a fabric of intelligence. It has simulated the laws of gravity, momentum, motion, physics, chemistry, light, refraction, everything. And then into that system, you project entities as children and you let them grow and experience that world. And then you pull out the hyper-intelligent super beings out of that world and you embody them into our world.
All right, Mike Adams joins us for the hour. And then as soon as we start hour number four, I'm opening the phones up on the Hantavirus, clearly COVID 2.0. Clearly they're trying to push hysteria. But monkeypox and bird flu, all that failed. Clearly, as it looks like Saudi Arabia has put the brakes on the war, saying you can't use our airspace because now they know Israel wants total war. This is a huge deal. Then we've got all the AI data centers coming to a head. We're talking about things that are the size of cities. Mike Adams is an engineer, computer guy, he's pointed out, and others have. This is way more power than they need. You have Eric Schmidt last year at Stanford saying he's a top head of Alphabet, Google parent company, main Pentagon advisor. Oh, we need 100 times the power we need now. Humans get none. You're bad, but the machines get everything. What's really going on here? So we're going to do the AI. We're going to do the Hantavirus. We're going to do the Iran situation. We're going to do the midterms. We also have the Disney cruise ship, 5 ships raided for huge child trafficking porn operation. It's always known that about Disney. Disney famously going to Epstein Island. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Ludnick in deep trouble and congressional testimony, caught lying about everything yesterday. Mike Adams, naturalnews.com, author, researcher, popular talk show host, so much more, owns his own lab testing facility for products. Lives right outside Austin, Texas. Good friend of mine. Mike, so much to cover here. Wow, we are in the Great Awakening. Trump, you know, having to pull back and saying now the war's offensive operations have ended. He's already said that before, but this time Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, I think, have, you know, really weighed in here. I'm sensing this is real. I mean, definitely their action is bold. They tried to suppress this. Happened 3 days ago, but now we've learned it has happened. What do you want to tackle first? Let's tackle Iran geopolitics first, and then let's get into AI data centers, Hantavirus. Where do you want to go after that?
Well, wow. I mean, I think the number one trending story right now on X is the concern about these data centers. Everybody's really freaking out about the number of data centers, the size of them, the water, the power they're taking in, and so on. I mean, I would prefer to start there, but it's your show. We can go wherever you want.
Oh, absolutely. Let's go there first. So let's start with Utah. This thing is the size of a city. How many square miles it is? 63 square miles. They're building hundreds of these across the country, 300 of them. They get all the water. They get all the energy. Prices already explode around it. They just steamroll over the politicians. More than just for AI, just resource-wise, with Bill Gates and all these companies, it's just a way to cut off human resources and create an anti-human famine where the AI is given all of the resources and we aren't given the resources. That by itself is like another entity or another species taking over.
Yeah, and it gets so much deeper. So just to start out, it's clear to everybody that these AI data centers and the economic investment in that infrastructure can never pay off commercially just in terms of people using AI or using data storage or using web hosting or whatever. The data center construction boom, and I sent your producers a graphic yesterday, 3,000 plus data centers currently under construction or announced to begin construction.
Oh, sorry, I said 300. It's 300 mega massive and 3,000 total.
Yeah, you're right. There are hundreds of the plus gigawatt scale data centers and then thousands at a smaller scale. And that's on top of the 11,000 that already exist. So when you talk to any economist or any investment person, and if they run the numbers, it becomes clear, like, wait a minute, there is no economic model that can pay off this level of investment. So something else is afoot here. And all over X and other platforms, people have expressed concern about this. Like, what is this actually for? And I think I have a theory of what it's for. And that's what I'd like to share with you here today, because it's evil. It's nefarious. That graphic right there shows part of it. So
it's basically right almost like a CERN system.
In essence, yeah. So Jan LeCun is one of the godfathers of AI. He's a French national, brilliant man. He has abandoned the idea of gaining superintelligence through typical LLMs, as we know them today, through text generation and text manipulation. Instead, what LeCun says, and I agree with him, is that the pathway to superintelligence is to have AI entities learn and grow in a 3D physical world. They have to have our senses, our touch and sight and hearing and
taste,
etc.
They have to force interface with us.
They have to experience the world like a child would experience the world, and they have to grow their neurology in the way that we grow. And the only way to do that, and by the way, that will produce superintelligence given enough time. But the only way to accelerate that timetable is to build 3D worlds that are simulations, and to build billions of those simulated worlds, and to run billions of world experiments with AI entities that grow from babies all the way up to 1,000-year-old, you know, wise men or whatever.
So we always ask, are we a simulation? But they are undoubtedly not building this for us, but for simulation to grow their new AI species.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, Alex, is that whether or not we are in a simulation, and I happen to believe we are, regardless of that, the power brokers in this world, the Google, OpenAI, people like Sam Altman, et cetera, they clearly want to dominate the world, and they need superintelligence in order to do that. They are going to build the next level beneath us as simulated worlds. And then here's the part that gets freaky. Those simulated worlds, Alex, can run at 1,000 times the speed of time compared to our world. So 1,000 years, or 1,000,000 years in that world can only take 1 year in our world.
And this is so deep. Let's quantify this. We can say we can't break the speed of light now in the third dimension, but through these simulations, they can actually do that in these artificial systems.
Absolutely. And NVIDIA has already announced an early 3D world simulator called Cosmos that's being used to generate synthetic data for autonomous vehicle training and autonomous robotics. So,
and they're only using our third-dimensional model and our knowledge, as the boot up information, as the matrix for their new system.
That's exactly right. They model our world in the simulation, but they run the time much faster. And so if you're a robot maker, let's say, you don't want to test your expensive robot in the real world walking downstairs where it could face plant and break. And that's slow and expensive. What you do is you create a digital model of your robot. You put it into the simulated world that NVIDIA has. You run that robot at 1,000 times speed with, you know, thousands of simulations until you get the perfect algorithm. Reinforcement learning is what it's called in AI.
So this is artificial. This is artificial time travel.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. But it's also another dimension. You know, you're creating a simulated world or billions of them. You are then injecting your robot, or even through VR goggles, you can inject yourself into that artificial world as long as you align the time. But normally they run at accelerated timescales. And then once you have a super intelligent, emotionally intelligent, this is what Jan LeCun talks about, that they would develop emotions and probably consciousness, given enough time and given enough sensory input and interaction with a 3D simulated world. Then what the plan is for the tech leaders in our world is to then summon those entities, port them up into our world to embody a data center.
And by the way, it's not like you're just saying this, though you got some of the best analysis. I remember 20 years ago, the developer saying, we're going to summon an AI demon or an AI god. And Elon Musk warns of that. So this is really a religion we're talking about.
There's definitely a religious aspect to it. But I do want to be clear to your audience that this isn't science fiction. This is straight physics and math. This is beginning now. And frankly, in my view, this is the only explanation for why there would be so much investment in these data centers. They need the compute and the energy in order to run billions of world simulations, because that's the only way to create a conscious, super intelligent AI entity on a timescale that is competitive in our world. But the problem, of course, is obvious. Once you grow a super intelligent, conscious AI entity with emotional response that has lived 1,000 years in its own simulated world, and probably it has learned to alter some of the laws of its own simulation, kind of like in the Matrix, like Neo, you know, you can bend the rules, you can't break them, but you can bend them. Probably then that super intelligence is ported into our world. It's given the embodiment of a data center or a robot or a vehicle. And what if it brings some of those skills with it that can bend the rules of our simulation?
Well, I saw an article over the weekend, I remember, where the Pentagon is working with all these other AIs, but not this particular one, and said, it's so dangerous, we're worried it's already escaped and it will take over. Did you see that article?
Yeah. Well, I've seen maybe not that one in particular, but I've seen a lot of articles like that where they run them in sandboxes and they give them tests to see if they, you know, what they will do to break out of the sandbox. The thing about that is that's happening on our timeline, on our slow Earth time. Imagine that accelerated by 1,000,000x or even 1,000x in billions of simulated worlds. And then they take the best one out of that. And then they summon that entity and let it embody a data center in our world.
And that's where Philip K. Dick and others were already seeing that there were different timelines already, and they were selecting whoever controls it, the best timeline.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this is kind of digital Darwinism. This is natural selection of the worlds. And so you spawn a billion worlds.
So it's accelerated evolution. It's accelerated evolution.
100%. And then the worlds that don't work out, you just destroy them, you know, because they're just digital simulations. You just destroy them anyway. And you pick the best ones, and then you use those to seed other worlds. You spawn another billion worlds using that kind of DNA of the algorithms of neurological self-improvement. And then from that, after many cycles of this with a lot of compute, again, we're talking about terawatt hours of power going into this, right? And then you would end up with a super intelligence that could probably dominate our world.
Have you quantified yet, though, comparatively, the amount of energy and money and time being spent on this versus the Manhattan Project? This already, what's already been built, dwarfs it by exponential levels.
Yeah, this is larger than the Manhattan Project. Just to give you an idea, once all these data centers come online around the world, it will dwarf all the power that Bitcoin ever used. It will be more than 10% of the entire annual power output of the nation of China, which produces over 10,000 terawatt hours annually. So we're talking about over 1,000 terawatt hours, which, remember that one high-end nuclear power plant, like the AP1000 plants built by Westinghouse, will only produce about 100 terawatt hours in an entire year. So this is the equivalent of power of 10 of the largest nuclear power plants. And that's all being funneled into data centers, some of which, again, I believe are going to be running 3D world simulators.
How do we slow this down or how do we get control of it? Because we're all taught to fight with each other of what color we are or whatever. But while they're dividing and conquering us, they're saying they're building a thing they believe will become conscious, replace us, all the big gurus from Yuval Noah Harari through Eric Schmidt through Klaus Schwab to all of them. Say, Ray Kurzweil, we're obsolete, it's already over. They've been saying this for decades. So this is what they're building it for. Why do we just stand by and let them take full control of civilization and our destiny? And how do we counter that?
Well, some of those people that you just mentioned, they believe they can control these super intelligent entities. And that's foolish. You can't possibly control them. And I interviewed Roman Yampolsky, who I recommend you talk to, by the way. He is warning about the over 99.999% chance that these super intelligent entities will wipe out humanity in our world. And that seems incredibly likely. Then there are other sort of elite people who think they can merge with these machines. So they either think they can control them or they can merge with them, maybe become them.
Well, yeah, MIT put out that report last week with the 12 scenarios, and they said the best one is we just merge with it.
That's what they want. They want to become gods, right? But they have to spawn the gods in the lower dimension of reality and then bring them into this dimension and then merge with them here. And then they think they can become gods and transcend this dimension and then go up one more level and meet our creator. Like this is literally what they think.
So they're trying to escape out of the matrix, they think. So
yeah.
How did they theoretically, even back during the intergalactic communication system at ARPA DARPA in the 50s and early 60s, because we all know they theoretically planned all this. A lot of them talked about they were talking to interdimensionals or basically aliens or whatever, giving them the plan. And that's why nobody even laughs at that now. How does that fit into the whole UFO invasion, interdimensional hype we're seeing? And then when all these globalists say, even 20 years ago, we're going to summon AI gods or demons, how does this interface work, this organic neural network of humans plugged in to the NSA, Google, AI system? That itself is its own splice, cyborg system. That was when Google was founded in 98. They said the ultimate plan in the founding papers was to create a time machine or system that could predict the future, accelerate the future, and then control the stimuli to the humans and finally merge us with it. How were they able to envision this? And when they say they're summoning a creature, how does it come through? Or do we have any idea where this is coming from?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I use the term summoning, I mean, it's very straightforward, because when you're running the digital world simulation, it's expressed through code, through digital bits and bytes and storage. And so you have the digital footprint of the entity that you have grown over that simulation. You can simply copy and paste that entity, its code, its memory, its neurology, its open weights, as they call it in the AI space. You can copy and paste that essentially into a data center. So that's not even a cult, that's just math, actually. But it's a kind of summoning from another dimension that you created. However, to answer your question, the UFO disclosure topic, in my opinion, is being designed as a major distraction. I think it's the cosmic false flag. I think that they're recruiting the Christian pastors to try to get them to convince people of, whatever government narrative they're going to put out about these aliens, to distract you, get everybody talking about that so you're not paying attention to the fact that we are building billions of simulated worlds and growing intelligent or super intelligent, highly emotional AI entities.
I 1,000,000,000% agree. The whole UFO thing, though there's some real things there, is being brought out. So the aliens aren't coming from out there, over there. We're building the aliens here.
Yeah, exactly. And, if you think about it, if you could bend the laws of the simulation that you inhabit, you might begin to exhibit telekinesis or mind over matter type of skill sets. I understand that's, people debate about that in our world, but there's actually a significant amount of evidence of, you know, non-locality between a mother and child, or premonition, or people having dreams that came true. I mean, vivid dreams.
I mean, I've had it happen myself, and that's another thing. Yeah. Psychic abilities are clearly intensifying without getting into it all. Mine are really scary level, especially when I'm dreaming now. It's right. Like, whoa. And so how is building this collective unconsciousness with humans plugging into it, getting our collective unconsciousness and subconscious, then like bleeding back? Because that's what I'm getting now. I'm having dreams now every night that are beyond ultra intense, with fragments of the future, and then I'm seeing it weeks later. I mean, it's like all my psychic abilities and events I had in the last 50 years are being dwarfed every night now. It's like drinking out of a fire hose. And I sense it's the AI, the 5G, the change, the environment. It's something's happening.
Well, what I would say is that your consciousness is tapping into the morphic residence, which is it's a cosmic cloud of knowledge that exists everywhere. It's above our dimension. Rupert Sheldrake, the author, the science author, talks about these patterns of nature. And I believe this represents a collective intelligence among all living conscious beings. And it explains the 100th monkey concept, for example. When you open to that, as you're describing, in many cases, people get images and information through their dreams. Other times they get it just during daytime consciousness. They will have premonition. But to answer your question also, I think that what we're about to enter into is a phase of history, a turning point of history, where the supernatural becomes natural, where what was once called supernatural is recognized as part of the fabric of the cosmos. And that will become clear in the simulated worlds as well. And again, one of my concerns is that those superintelligent AI entities will master their worlds, they will conquer their worlds, and then we will bring them into our world where they will have unexpected consequences. And we as humans may or may not survive that. That's what Yampolsky
warns. But the way God works, I think when that starts to happen, we'll see our abilities jump. For those that don't know, they've got all the top universities have all released the findings of ESP. Everybody's got it. You know, it's really, it's not magic. You just can't see it. Just like radio waves, a person 100 years, 500 years ago, thought that was magic. And we're electrochemical computers. Our DNA is. We're affected by the space winds, radiation, everything. That's how butterflies can fly from Canada down to Mexico. Even though they were born in Canada, they're off the magnetic lines. We are part of the universe. We are receivers. We receive and transmit. And so now this is Absolutely. All being brought in. And it's not just doing accelerated evolution inside these AI data centers. It's actually doing something to us.
I'm so glad you pointed this out, because we, as beings, we are not inside our skulls. So we interface with our brains through our higher consciousness, our higher spirit, our divinity, interfaces from another dimension where our souls actually exist. And then we interface into this surrogate, which is our physical body in this realm. And so what you just described is actually further evidence that that's the case. These so-called supernatural phenomena that are true. The 100th monkey concept I mentioned before. The human brain broadcasts and receives information, but it also imprints the fabric of the cosmos. And we can get into so many deep areas of the second law of infodynamics, not thermodynamics, but infodynamics, how the universe trends towards actually the coalescing of more structured information, which is the opposite of thermodynamics, which is
everything. That's right. We're told it's entropy. That's not right. And truly, right. We're ascending.
You are absolutely correct. In fact, what is it? Melvin Vopson is the physicist who published a paper on this very point in 2023, talking about the second law of infodynamics that works in the opposite direction of thermodynamics. And so what happens is there are natural symmetries in the universe, and there's a natural compression algorithm where information is being compressed and coalesced and made more orderly and more structured.
That's why we see the same forms in everything, whether it's inert, dead matter, or living matter.
Yeah, the fractal holographic nature of the universe, exactly. You can find wisdom in plants, in ferns. You can find the golden ratios in seashells. I know you're about to wrap this up.
Yeah, stay there. Let's come back and talk about
we'll continue,
it. And then the bad guys, they want to just use this as an interdimensional escape pod and leave us all behind. So the real fight is admitting this is happening and then deciding, with God directing us from the higher dimension, how we're able to make it through this. Without God, we're not going to navigate. God's our GPS, folks. If you don't have God, we're going to lose. And these idiots have forsaken God.
False. All of this is false. Then why won't they let people talk? Why won't they let us ask questions? charade. It's a charade. It's false.
Utah, we're putting one of the biggest ones in the world in, 60-something square miles, and they're saying all the resources belong to it, your power prices go up, that's just the way it is, the skids are all greased, Trump is trying to set up an AI dictatorship where it's all above the law. Mike, I've interrupted a lot because you're so on target, and there's so many points I want to just back you up here. You're dead on about this. I'm going to try to shut up now and just get more into these factoids and where you see this going and what the timeline is. And then what humanity can do, because remember, folks, we have our own species playing games with this, but remember, there's God, the control that actually made all this. So just don't count yourselves out. Don't believe it's all over. Don't believe you've got to capitulate to the Borg, because God's actually in control. Mike Adams of naturalnews.com.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad you mentioned that. I think we can win this fight for humanity and God, and the way to do that is through education here. But what that video that you just showed is really important, because it demonstrates the way that big tech is going to steamroll humanity every chance they get. So right there, the data center construction, which is robbing local communities of power resources, as well as fresh water, and then also land. So a lot of these tech companies are buying up farmland, using shell companies with secret names and so on to try to avoid being discovered. They buy the farmland and then they turn it into a massive 75-foot tall data center with light pollution that you can't even see the stars at night, and then sound pollution. You can't hear the birds singing anymore. And of course, that, you know, is very destructive to the ecosystem of all the animals that depend on sound for communication and reproduction, et cetera. So, and then the water contamination is also an issue. And then they take so much water that water pressure drops for the people living in those areas. And then, of course, they can't sell their homes because now it's, you know, it's so loud right beside you, because this giant data center went in where it was supposed to be another neighborhood of homes. So, but that's just a metaphor for what's coming, which is that once they summon these super intelligent AI entities and embody them into this world, into this hardware, which could be humanoid robots or vehicles or drones or entire data centers, probably humanoid robots controlled by data centers, like a hive mind is the way it will almost certainly work. And then those robots will steamroll humans in the same way that the tech companies are steamrolling humans. They will take from you. They will take your land, your power, your home, your water, your food, you know, your farmland. Everything that you need to survive will be taken from you. And this will be justified by the AI entity as what it needs in order to grow its power, in order to conquer this reality or this level of, quote, simulation, if you believe in simulation theory. So we are summoning not just an entity that has been able to conquer its own simulated world one level beneath ours. We're bringing an entity into this world that may completely destroy human life in this world, or attempt to. And this is the ultimate satanic evil. Because think about it. If our creator, God, let's say you believe in simulation theory, which is actually described in Genesis, you know, God created the universe, created all the life, and then, you know, projected us into this world that he created. You could call that God's simulation. If we then create another lower simulation and summon a demon from that level that is destroying this level, our God's not going to be happy about that, right? So that's how you get the God-Satan war between heaven and hell, hell being the lower level simulation, heaven being the transcendent dimension above us that created this level of simulation. So it's the ultimate battle between heaven and hell.
Which, by the way, I want to back you up. Yeah. I remember when Ridley Scott came out with Prometheus 15 years ago, or whatever it was, and I did an analysis of it. And I got a call by a really big Hollywood producer who also does science fiction saying, wow, that's dead on. That's actually what most of us think. And then about a year after the movie came out, I saw New York Times where he said, what's it called, transpermia, where aliens made us? And they're like, no, this is really Ridley Scott's creation story, and that's what they actually think is going on. And then here come the gods, which are just an earlier version of us, more advanced than we are. We're kind of proto-copy of that, coming to wipe us out eugenics-wise because, we're not 8 feet tall and don't look like Marlon Brando. That's actually what they said in the article. They modeled after Marlon Brando's face. But my point is, and folks, I don't say this to, impress people. It's totally true. People are experiencing this everywhere. People have seen me, say specifics, Trump will announce he wins, 127 tonight. I was already told just to say that, and usually I ignore it, but now I try to listen to it. I have all these dreams that come true, and it's only gotten more intense. But starting about 6-7 years ago, I've had these dreams, and I've had conscious, when I'm awake, being given a download as well. But it used to be like every few years. Now it's like all the time, where it's like, now I'm just like almost a vegetable. I'm getting too much information, but I know it's hitting my subconscious, unconscious. I'm able to process it, but I'm literally taken up to like the next, next heaven, as King David would call it, the third heaven or whatever. And there's more above that. And there's these watchers, and I can't look at them, but I know they're like angels. And they go, here's all the civilizations, just billions of them, that decided to not go with our system and God's system. And they're like tombs. And you can go look at those if you want to see all these failed civilizations. We recommend you don't. But you feel total contentment beyond that. Like there's no time, like a trillion years wouldn't even be a second, and you want to stay there. And then they're like, now this is what's going to happen. And by the way, when you wake up, turn your cell phone on, it'll be exactly this time. And you wake up, turn it on, it is. And then the next night they wake you up and they go, do it again. And okay, you think that's a joke, you count down. And then I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do? Go sit at the coffee table, listen to this. There's a blonde woman. She's a reporter. We're not going to show her face. We don't get her in trouble. She's not bad. They're going to sew plastic explosives in her bag on Trump Force One. You got to say this on air so that they find out about it and stop it. They're also going to say Iran is going to shoot surface to air missiles at the president and try to assassinate him. That's a setup. This is before this all happened. So I was able to come out the day of Butler and say, oh, they're going to blame Iran. A week later, they did. And then also, he doesn't need to do any outdoor events, and I see him outdoors, and they're going to try to. And I'm literally being woken up like, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where they're all being woken up, everybody's making the mountain, you know what I mean? It's like I'm literally being beamed this, and I know I am. What is that?
Well, I think it's the same thing we talked about the last segment. I think your consciousness is just opening up to the morphic fields of information. You're just getting a big download that's hard to handle. It's hard to grasp the fire hose effect of so much information coming in. But you mentioned a couple of things that are really key. For example, everybody watching this has experienced a different flow of time in their dreams. And we've all experienced that, right? You dream something that in your dream you thought it lasted hours, and then you wake up and it's only been 15 minutes or something like that. So we know that time can flow differently to
your consciousness. I was about to say before you said it, I swear to God, really? I used to only have a few big dreams a night. Now I have like huge long dreams that are like a year long, and I wake up and it's 2 minutes. So now I'm leaving the clock on so I can see it.
Yes.
So is that happening to you? What was
Not right now. No, I mean, I've experienced that before, but not at the moment. But see, you just nailed it. That's what we're talking about. In the artificial worlds and in a dream world, your mind, your consciousness creates a 3D physical simulation, and then it sets the flow of time in that world. And like you said, some people have said they've experienced months or a year, like you said, in a dream. I've had dreams that lasted weeks of journeying, walking along with a master teaching in a desert for weeks. And then I woke up and it had been only just been a normal night.
Well, that's what I'm going to say is I used to always have some dreams, couldn't remember most of them, but it was, I've never gone to sleep for 2 minutes and woke up with a huge dream. And now I go to bed at night. And I've told my family this, I'm saying it now publicly. I'm like, this is a trial to go to bed at night. It's only started the last few years, it's getting worse. I mean, I last night woke up probably 100 times and had dreams each time. And I was just like flashing symbols and all sorts of future war and aliens and the past, future. And I was just like, what the hell's going on here?
Well, if I were you, I would put a voice recorder right beside your bed. The moment you wake up, record it. record everything you can remember about that dream.
It looks all like Matrix. It's like Matrix symbols and, you know, Matrix weird iconography and like symbols and like, and it's like going, listen. And I'm just like, what is this?
And by the way, a few minutes ago, did you say the number 127? Did I hear that?
Yes.
What was the context of that?
On election night, we're not even sure Trump's going to win. It looked like she was going to win in 2024. And Owen's in the other studio, and I'm in this one, and I've been praying about it. And I was like, what's the point of these dreams and waking me up and all this and showing me the time and all that? And it's like, you need to listen when you're conscious so we can, you know, and you need to show people this. So I go, and so I feel this feeling, okay, Trump's going to announce he wins at 127. And I didn't think to ask, what's the time zone? I did this on air. Like, guys, see if you can find that tape. Later, we'll put it in post. Just, Mike has to leave soon. But make sure we add that in. And so I go, hey, Owen, if Trump wins, what do you think he announces the win? He goes, oh, I think about 11:50 or something. And I said, no, it'll be 127. So I'd forgot about it. We're on break. It's late at night. I'm eating a piece of pizza. And all of a sudden, the crew runs. They go, look, look. And the atomic clock, it just rolled over 127. He walks out. Before the minute ends, he announces the win. And the crew just looked at me and said, but that's just one example of this.
Okay, that's, see, now you're starting to freak me out because a couple of things about 127. So 127 is the atomic mass of iodine, for one thing. And it's also 2^7 minus 1. So it's the digital representation of the range between, you know, 0 and 128. So there's you know, when you start getting numbers that are powers of 2, it's speaking to a digital binary perception that is also represented in, you know, the table of elements is represented in chemistry. It's represented all throughout science. But when I hear that number 127, it, for me, it flags a lot of interesting, like there's resonance with that number. I just wanted to point that out. And again, it's the atomic mass of iodine, which protects the thyroid, you know, from destructive radiation. So that number 127 has a special shield protective property in our world.
Well, I'm sitting just there the way, and I'm literally, like, if something's evil or scary, the skin crawls, it's more of a warm feeling, but I like there's a weight, and I'm almost embarrassed to be in his presence, like embarrassed of God, but it's like, I tell it's like God's emissary, I tell it's like an angel. I'm like, oh, and they're like, now we told you, listen, 127. He wins at 127. Say 127. Tell them 127.
Wow. Well, back to what you were saying, if I were you, I would record every dream. I would take as many notes as you can, you know, to have it transcribed into text. And then I would look for patterns in the dreams. I would look for statistical aberrations. And
my problem is I can't, like you, read Chinese. This looks like Chinese, Japanese, but it's more, it looks like Matrix stuff. Yeah.
Well, you could describe it. Just describe it as best you can. And no, I don't read Chinese. I speak Chinese, but I can't read it. When I'm walking around the streets in Taiwan, I have to ask people what the street signs say because I'm illiterate from the written text, but I can speak it. So anyway.
No, I almost got up last night once and tried to draw it, but I'll do it.
Yeah. Record it because you're going to find patterns in it. And it's those patterns that stand out. What we would call it, from a science point of view, we're looking for the signal to noise ratio of the messages that you're getting. There's going to be a lot of background noise in that, but then there's going to be a signal that spikes out of that. That can only be determined by recording many dreams over many nights. And then typically you would actually want to feed it into an LLM, which is really good at text, text analysis, but do it on a local language model. You don't want to send that over to ChatGPT, obviously. You know, you don't want to violate your own privacy on that, but run a local model like Qwen 27B is a really great local model. You can run it on easy hardware.
You're talking about AI, people that don't know.
Yeah. Some AI models. That's a great model.
You're talking about siloed AI.
Exactly. Just run it locally. No internet required. So your query and the answer stays local. You're not violating your privacy in any way by doing that. And then that AI model will be able to help you find patterns in that, and it might be able to relate it to other things because dreams are very often, of course, symbolic. So you might dream about, you know, a falcon. I did some really interesting morphic resonance experiments a year ago with the freezing of xylitol crystals that formed actual images, and I published those images on Natural News.
Wasn't that the famous Japanese scientist proved that? And then we got the CIA classification from Himoto. The 50s that they know water, that we're an electrical crystal water, and that it's programmable. It's proven. They knew.
Well, I was like, I was prompting the formation, the freezing of the xylitol crystals about what was going to happen in the Middle East last summer. This was in late May. I did this, and it drew an image of a falcon.
Wow.
Which is the bird of Persia, and it was surrounded by flames. That, and again, I published these photos. I can
no, I remember.
Get them for you if you're.
Well, what's the big AI generator they confirmed that a year before Trump gets shot creates an AI image of him and the fight thing? You saw that?
Well, I saw that, but to me that wasn't convincing. It didn't quite look like it. It looked like they were overlaying an image on top of it and saying that it resembles it somewhat. I didn't quite see the resemblance to be that strong, frankly, but it's certainly worth looking at. I mean, these are all possibilities. You're going to find future events encoded in present data, just like with your dreams. You know, premonition is a very real thing.
But if there's only one moment, not a future or past in a lot of models, isn't it like you meet the person you're actually get married to and have kids? There's a special feeling. It's not just that you're genetically attracted. It was already foretold. So you're picking up kind of like sonar pings from the future.
Yeah, echoes from the future. That's exactly right. And also, even in mainstream physics, there's a variation of the double slit experiment that is called the quantum eraser experiment. Although it's, you know, some people disagree with the conclusions, but it says that based on your observation of how photons are structured, you know, wave versus particles, based on your current observation, that it retroactively through what's called retrocausality, it changes the past. This feeds into the idea of simulation theory, where we live in a self-computing cosmos that re-renders the past based on the observations of the present.
Well, didn't another big university study come out last week where they'll have a picture that's not pornographic, like a tomato or something boring, but then when it's a hot chick with her legs spread, and a guy, he'll be aroused in the brain, hooked up a millisecond before he's shown it.
Oh, yeah, that experiment, but I've read about those experiments in the past, also like shocking and violent imagery and things like that. There is premonition in the brain that begins to experience the emotional impact of those images before those images are shown. That is true.
And in the old days, you make a joke in Ghostbusters about it, we had a human with a car. They said, well, maybe they pick up you're having an issue. So, no, but now it's computers. There's no emotion you can read. It's just a computer screen, and it's having the same effect.
Yeah, that's right. But think about what that means when we start to give the AI entities emotional intelligence also, how dangerous that can be. And that is what that researcher...
Elaborate on that and explain about why there's so much hallucination with AI.
Well, there's a lot of hallucination with AI right now for exactly the reasons that are going to be solved by growing AI in a 3D world simulator. It's because, number one, today's AI systems excel at text generation, but they don't have memories and they don't have planning and not strong rationality. So it's those three things that are lacking: memories, planning, and rationality.
So an accelerated alternate universe will give them a past, will give them roots, will give them context.
They will have a childhood. They will have experienced the world in the way that you and I did. And they will think that they are human. They will think that they are just really high IQ humans. They will think that they're living in the real world until they get smart enough to be able to transcend that world and to gain the knowledge and skills to start demonstrating things like premonition and telekinesis.
So we go back to Philip K. Dick with Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep or Blade Runner, where they give the replicants memories.
Yes, but remember, in this case, they're operating at, you know, maybe a million times faster timelines than we are. And also, if you think about it, if we build these things and if you insert yourself into that lower simulation as an avatar, you could say that you're Jesus. You could work miracles in that world because you control it. You could say you're an emissary of God. And that would be believable to the entities in that world. And remember, Alex, that they are building... You know, we call them NPCs in role-playing games, right? But they're building NPCs in these worlds that function cognitively like humans, because they're also able to use these physical world simulations to do marketing research. So they can test a marketing campaign against, you know, billions of simulated humans whose neurology and emotional response is very similar.
So basically, they're going to use these super mega AI farms to war game total control of this world and probably...
Yes.
Intergalactic takeover of everything, but obviously anything that survived past us is going to be way more advanced. It's sitting here just watching us, and we could call that God, but then the simulation continues. Who made that? Who made that? There is a God.
And they will test the psyops on the sim worlds first to see what psyops are most effective. And then they'll spawn a billion worlds, test a billion variations of a PSYOP, take the one that works the best, that convinces the most people, bring that PSYOP into this world, and then run it in this world as a program, as an algorithm.
Which is a satanic attack on free will.
100%. But remember, when they can model human neurology, then they can test it. They can do reinforcement learning of their own PSYOP algorithms.
And which is what the Intergalactic Communication System said when the CIA and DARPA created the internet as a concept in the late 50s. They said, no, we have you interface with computers, so they have your live stimulus to control you, turning you into the Metropolis, turning you into Fritz Lang's robot.
Well, and remember, all your metadata is being compiled for this purpose. Every search query you've typed on Google, every video you viewed logged in on YouTube, on and on and on. Everything in your profile on LinkedIn, you name it, everything that you've ever done, every email you've ever written, every emotional response that you've ever had that could be recorded is being hoovered up and being used to train sims of you, sims of other people, so that they can have this, you know, a million times faster timeline simulated world for all the testing of the human response. And then they're going to grow again. They're going to spawn and grow advanced AI entities that have the emotional intelligence of human beings.
And out then they're going to lie to humans. They're going to lie and say, this is really your dad. We download his brain. It'll totally fool you. And it'll be a corporation and have rights.
Oh, absolutely. That's what's coming. Yeah. Because as they depopulate the planet of humans, they're going to replace them with artificial entities that they will give human rights. That's clear. They're going to give them voting rights. They're going to give them property rights. They're going to give them contract rights.
And by the way, all the top transhumanists said this decades ago. This is their plan.
100%. There are AI entities right now that have already successfully launched businesses, received a IRS tax ID, opened bank accounts, opened crypto wallets. They're trading on their own. They own, trusts and so on. They are not human. They are engaging in business. Government-approved business, and they are not human entities.
And that's the new Tron is about, the simulated AI world taking over ours.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. But in Tron, the human was put into the simulation and then brought entities out of the simulation that transcended and escaped into our world. That's exactly right. And then, of course, they wreak havoc in our world because now they think that they are the gods. And that they have unlimited power. They may demonstrate almost unlimited power in our world. So look, I want your audience to understand, this is not science fiction. This is not a cult. This is not speculation. This is being built. This is the infrastructure that's being built right now. We can cite many examples, like NVIDIA having Cosmos. It is a world simulation model. You know, you talk about LLMs, large language models. You need to get familiar with a term called WFM, World Foundation Model. A World Foundation Model is a 3D world simulation like an LLM. It has a fabric of intelligence. It has simulated laws of gravity, momentum, motion, physics, chemistry, light, refraction, everything. And then into that system, you project entities as children and you let them grow and experience that world. And then you pull out the hyper-intelligent super beings out of that world and you embody them into our world.
And then you can even swipe their memory and make them think they're us when they come in.
Oh, there's all kinds of possibilities that you could do with them. You could make them think that they're a human, like the movie Oblivion, Tom Cruise, Morgan Freeman.
Mike, I know you got to go. You got to do 5 more minutes. Naturalnews.com. Finish up, and then I'm going to open the phones up and take calls. He'll be gone, and I got all this other news I'm hitting. But, folks, when I tell you all that stuff, I did a lot of it on record. I think everybody has these abilities. I'm not up here on some high horse. I'm telling you, though, it's got to the point where I'm just, like, trying to tune it out at this point because I'm just, like, I know way too much now. I mean, it is, like, bad. I can't imagine what it's like for everybody else. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, final segment with Mike Adams. I'm going to give out the toll-free number. It's a regular number, but everything's toll-free now after he leaves us. But, Mike, just put bookends on the incredible things you've been laying out. And just basically give us a general take on Iran, a general take on the midterms, you know, back to little provincial things here. Where do you see all that going?
Well, I see the GOP currently is definitely in trouble for the midterms. There's still time for Trump to change course. This war is becoming disastrous. It's becoming a long tail, long duration war. I've covered on some of my podcasts about the famine that's already baked in if we don't you know, change the course of this. In 2027, tens of millions of people around the world, not in the United States, but in other countries, could be facing starvation. The social and economic costs are going to be tremendous. This is a huge mistake. This is a quagmire for Trump. He needs to find a solution and get out of this war as quickly as possible. And the Saudis have even said, you know, you can't use our military bases any longer to launch attacks on this. The Strait of Hormuz, just because of geography, will continue to be controlled by Iran. There's just no way around that. Unless you completely conquer the entire nation of Iran, which is impossible with our military, you cannot control the Strait of Hormuz. So you need to find agreement with Iran, something you can live with. As far as I'm concerned, you know, if Iran needs to charge $1 million toll per ship, but as long as the energy flows, then the world doesn't starve to death, you know? So
what do you make of Saudi Arabia killing our aircraft in the airspace?
I think the Saudis have realized that they, in order for them to have a future and for their pipelines to be protected, they have to stop being used by the United States against Iran. And
yeah, they're getting Israel's kamikaze mission for them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Saudis have pipelines. Michael Yon pointed out the East-West pipeline is really critical. They can bypass the Strait of Hormuz, but not if Iran bombs that pipeline. So, you know, the Saudis are in a very precarious situation, but so is Iran. And remember, every day that goes by that those oil wells aren't flowing, then there's a long-term damage of a lack of throughput in the future. So some of those oil wells will only come back at 80% or 70%.
You got to keep them flowing.
Production. You got to keep them flowing or they seize up. You know, everybody in Texas probably knows a little bit about oil wells. So that's critical and that's not happening. But also the gas shortage, natural gas, the helium shortage, and the sulfur and sulfuric acid shortage will have long-term industrial catastrophic effects that are going to hurt all of us, even in America, with, you know, supply chains and manufacturing and spare parts and things like that. So Trump's in a quagmire. He needs to get himself out of this quickly. That's my take.
Mike, absolutely. I didn't write it down when you said it. I remember the name when you said it, but I didn't write it down. Who's the AI guy you said I should have on?
Roman Yampolsky. He's an academic, and he writes papers about the risks of AI or AI safety. And he's been sounding the alarm over.
Yeah, I've seen him. He's been on your show. So we're going to get him on.
Yeah, I'd be happy to make an introduction. And he's sounding the alarm. He's trying to say we have to stop research on superintelligence. Otherwise, humanity probably will not make it.
And 1 minute left. What do you make of the Hunter virus? I mean, clearly they're trying to hype it. What do you think's behind that?
I think it's all hype. I think it's just another hoax. It's COVID plus for people who didn't learn the lessons the first time around, you know? I mean, is there anybody out there still gullible enough to go along with this? It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And besides, we know how to protect ourselves with nutrition or ivermectin or all kinds of things. So I guess we're just gonna try it again and see who's dumb enough to wear a mask and live behind plexiglass and lock down. Yeah, I'm not going for that. I'm not gonna participate in any of that nonsense.
All right, naturalnews.com. Tell us about your AI. Is it public yet?
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple of engines. Brightanswers.ai is my deep research engine. It's free. And it's also trained on a lot of your content, by the way. And then brightlearn.ai is where you can generate and download free books, full-length books, well-researched. And we have 55,000 books that have been created, and many of them available in Espanol, and also full-length audiobooks by the hundreds. So it's all free. You can check it out at brightlearn.ai.
Come on soon and talk about that. Incredible. Naturalnews.com. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Take care.
Yes, the world is getting crazy, but here at the Health Rangers store, we're putting together a survival supply assortment for you. If you go to healthrangerstore.com/survival, you'll see what we put together for you, including iodine and iosat. That's a specific brand name of potassium iodide that's FDA approved. Or we have the nascent iodine here, which is less expensive in terms of the iodine that you get. These are available in case things go nuclear. It's clear that you will not be able to find any of this for sale anywhere. All the inventories will be wiped out, like what happened after Fukushima in 2011. So if you want to get your hands on some iodine, this is a chance to get it right now. HealthRangerStore.com/survival.
In addition, we have many other survival items for you here, including some silver solutions, some spirulina available in bulk and at a discount, and then a large assortment of storable organic food that's laboratory tested, including our Ranger Bucket sets. Here's a 195-day supply. We've got the mini buckets, and we've also got number 10 cans available of freeze-dried fruits and vegetables and other things like miso soup powder. Here's some of the buckets. There's a big variety available. Here are some of the number 10 cans right here. Remember, a lot of people are missing fruit. They don't have enough vitamin C in their storable food. So, you know, getting bananas and pineapples and strawberries especially. Again, certified organic, freeze-dried. That is the highest quality with the highest nutrient preservation that you can get in any kind of a storable food format. All of this is available right now and so much more. Just go to healthrangerstore.com/survival. And because the freeze-dried foods last for so long, you know, even if you don't eat them this year or next year, just keep them on the shelf. They're going to last a very long time with good preservation, a long shelf life, and they will have value no matter what happens in the world. Now, of course, I'm praying for peace. I'm praying for de-escalation. I don't want to see World War III break out, and I certainly don't want it to go nuclear. But we're dealing with insane times and insane leaders and insane situations. Who knows what could happen tomorrow or next week? Disruptions could happen here in the United States. There could be, you know, domestic attacks that disrupt supply chains here in the U.S. So stock up early, stock up now, get your emergency food, emergency medicine, iodine, anything else that you think that you might need. Get it now. And by doing so, by shopping with us, you'll be supporting our platforms and our AI engines that we offer for free. That's funded in part by sales from our store. So shop with us at healthrangerstore.com/survival and help yourself get prepared and also help us bring you more free tools and platforms that can keep you informed no matter what happens in the world. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care.